Senator Murali, 5 minutes late. Yes, Dan, yes. We have an aggressive agenda today. So there are a number of legislators in the audience, and they're all moving to the table now. Good. So real quickly, if I could, I'm going to start down on, off to my right down there with Sandy, if we could just introduce ourselves to the people. Let's start with Mr. Winkler. President Winkler, if you could just introduce yourself to the group quickly. And
my name is Brian Winkler. I represent District 44B, Golden Valley, St. Louis Park. Go.
Thank you. I'm John Burns. Hey, Brian, I'm a freshman. I represent 11 cities in the Lake Minnetonka area, and I live in Moisette.
Hello, I'm Sandy Winkler. I represent 38A, which is basically the western portion of Egan and the top portion of Burnsville.
I'm Representative Larry Hyde. I used to be an old county commissioner, and now I'm a very young state representative. And that's the magic of metamorphosis, which must be in this lifestyle in some ways. I represent St. Cloud 15B.
I'm Tom Bach. I'm a member of the State Senate. I was elected in 1994. I represent Senate District 6 and the current chair of the Senate Tax
Committee. And I'm Kathy Saltzman. I represent Senate District 56 in Woodbury, Lake Elmo, Stillwater. I'm in my first term and I'm vice chair of our Senate Business Committee.
And I am Representative Tim Mahoney. I think I've been here. Finishing up my fifth term, I represent the northeast corner of the city of St. Paul, and I chair the Bioscience and Emerging Technology Committee.
My name is Kim Norton. I'm a representative from the Rochester area, and I'm vice chair of the same.
I'm Representative Julie Vaughn. I represent District 56A, which extends from Stillwater down to Woodbury.
Paul Peason from Minneapolis.
Good afternoon, I'm Senator Julie Rosen. I have a tough write-up from Southern Minnesota, the 5 counties that I served down there. And I was fortunate to be appointed on the Governor's Bioscience Task Force with Representative Bobby Lee and Senator Kelly. And I believe Representative Glenn Mathis working on bioscience for us.
I want to thank all the members that could make it today. And with that, with a very tight agenda, I would like to call up Angara to give us a few moments of introductions and overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the House and Senate, thank you very, very much for hosting your joint hearing here. This is really a big day for us, and it's extremely important in that both the communication and identification of issues, but also we want you to take a look at what's out there. The people interacting and that get out on that show floor, take a look at that conference guide to see what kind of information is passing during the day. It is world class. It is the best in the world that you're seeing, and we got to make sure it keeps being the best in the world. We're really proud of it, and so we're extremely glad that you're here. So let me talk at you for about 4 or 5 minutes, maybe, on just overviewing what's going on both here as well as in this beloved state of ours. I'm the president and CEO of Life Science Alley. Now I've identified myself appropriately. It's a Minnesota-based trade association for the life sciences. And on behalf of our 550 member organizations, I really welcome the opportunity to testify on the challenges and opportunities that are facing this industry that is so key to our state. We really do recognize all of you receive an overwhelming amount of requests for legislative support. Not just money, all kinds of legislative support and response, etc. So what we're trying to do today is help you get additional information that can help you respond to those requests, as well as develop some of the interactive relationships that are important to making this industry so stronger in this state, and so that it survives and flourishes. So that's what we're up to. We've been part of a team working with an organization that is very close to us. In fact, they're right around the corner in the hall, Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota. I'll call it a very close partner and extremely important to all of this in this state. As you know, they're creating a master plan for the state in the, on the biosciences, and that is vital. We cannot expect you to do something that is both near-term and long-term unless we build a plan for you so that you can squeeze it and punch it and take a look at it. So that's what they are up to. They are incredibly valuable to this state, and so we need to make sure that their well-being continues. The past, present, and future course of life sciences can be seen in various forms at today's conference. So it's kind of fun to see what's going on. There are over 1,200 people here for just this single day conference. They are from 435 companies, 27 states, and 12 countries. Most of them saying they've not seen anything like this. They're very impressed by the infrastructure and the quality of the science and the quality of the people and the quality of education that we have here. Again, that's something that we need to invest in, that we need to save, because there's some really cool data behind that. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. There are medical device and pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies here today. We also have healthcare providers and insurers participating, something that doesn't go on anywhere else in the United States. It really doesn't. So these companies address human health, they address animal health, they address crops, and renewable energy. You will be hard-pressed to find another place in the world that has all of these different groups, and then it lends to the strength that we're talking about. All of these different groups as part of their economy, or to find an event that brings that cross-section together. And that the event, well, okay, it's a little bit of Rudy Toot Toot about an event, but the social networking, the bringing them together, is an incredible value. And Paul Yock from Stanford looked at me last night and today both. He said, I've never seen anything like it. He said, it doesn't happen anywhere that I can find. We need to lever from strengths that are already building for us. So our conference guide provides detailed information on the speakers, seminar topics. So I think you may already have those. If you don't, I'll get you some. So it would take 5 minutes to just spin through it just to see quality and what's out there. I think you'd be surprised by the range and caliber of topics and the people that are here today. And throughout the guide, we have listed medical milestones that hits back to what's gone on in the state and the legacy that we have and how important it is. There's also a significant international presence here today from Canada, Sweden, and China, and then 9 other countries. But don't forget those 3 countries. Scotland's another one. There's some really cool stuff going on between Minnesota and those countries. Additionally is Sweden. So really, really important business builders here in this state. Those representatives, they're all drawn to the large and innovative industry that exists here. So they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be talking about new things in education or new things in biotechnology or life science if we didn't have it. They wouldn't be here. So that's the kind of thing that we need to continue to grow. After the completion of this hearing, I encourage you and your staff to walk around the exhibit floor. Nobody will sell you anything. There's a lot of fun stuff you can get. Good grabs. And see the range of the members. Those are all member organizations of Life Science Alley out on that floor. So just take a look. It'll only take you 10-15 minutes. There are over 130 organizations exhibiting today, and many of them may surprise you. We often people think of the life science industry here as Medtronic or 3M, but the industry is much broader than that. Hundreds of small and medium-sized companies dot the state, from Worthington to Wilmer, Hortonville kid, Burnsville to Baudette, and to other points in between. They develop drugs and devices to treat people and animals, create renewable energy resources, plastics that do not depend on oil, crops that need fewer pesticides and have more nutrition. There are 21 seminars going on today that cover a wide range of topics, including nanotechnology, drug device convergence, and renewable energy. So how can we can't expect you to do the things that need to be done if we can't give you a plan, and that's what biobusiness is doing. It's extremely important. The speakers in these seminars include some of the most well-respected researchers and executives in the industry, and not just from Minnesota, literally around the world. Bringing this expertise together in one place creates an opportunity for Minnesota's companies to build new business, find ideas, and form collaborations and partnerships. The heart of Minnesota's life science industry, however, is its people. Pollyak just talked about it at Stanford. It's the students. It's the faculty. We are fortunate to have such a phenomenal education institution in our state, or institutions in our state. Their strength draws the best and the brightest from Minnesota, the U.S., and around the world to their halls. On display in the main hall, you'll see, you can't see them now, there were 60 posters in a poster session. Again, I've had confirmation from really high-end people that they extremely high-quality student presentation and high-quality science and really bright kids. So another kind of thing that is extremely important in this stew that we're talking about. So as we talk about jobs, something that's important for you as you do your job, every one of these jobs that comes out of this life science, bioscience world creates another 5.7 in the state or in the community. That's another extremely important thing to remember. You will see many of these companies at our conference today in their law firms, marketing agency, tool and die shops, courier services, packaging companies, technical writers, banks, patient advocacy groups, hospitals, doctors' offices, facilities, designs, and construction firms, and more, all adding to the economy of the state. The lives of millions worldwide are improved by the drugs and devices developed here in Minnesota. The jobs of thousands in every corner of Minnesota benefit from the investments these companies make through the purchasing of goods and services here in the state. Minnesota is truly blessed to be the home of such a strong cluster of people, ideas, and companies. Their efforts enrich our community and they contribute significantly to making Minnesota the great state that it is. That's why we get up in the morning, to make sure that continues. But we should not rest easy, confident in our position. No way. Technology marches on, industry changes. Minnesota must be a good steward of its resources to keep and grow its leadership. The world is in the midst of a scientific revolution, absolutely, positively. Advances in our understanding of biology, physiology, computer science, and many other areas are contributing to the development of new and better treatments daily. And the pace is only accelerating. It's an incredible pace. Many states and foreign nations are investing heavily in research, development, and commercialization of these advances. These places are hungry. They are literally hungry to possess a vibrant and strong community like we have in Minnesota. And they're taking hunks out of it, but we've still got a lot to make sure we keep track of. Last legislative session, Life Science Alley advanced a number of proposals to address the challenges and the opportunities that the industry faces. And we really, really appreciate the efforts and response from this group and your colleagues in that really important round of effort and understanding and information passing and back and forth from the tax committee to the different subcommittees and especially to Representative Mahoney and his committee. It's just been fabulous experience with you. These included that investment tax credit to support critical early stage funding, a program to support spin-off technologies from our larger established firms, the funding of the University Enterprise Laboratory, a key to what we're talking about. We will continue to work with the Biosciences and Emerging Technology Committee and the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee, as well as other relevant committees and interested senators and representatives to advance the state of the life sciences in Minnesota. Chairman Mahoney, members of the committee, the following testifiers will discuss some of the challenges and opportunities we face. They also will present a number of options to improve our position. These proposals and ideas, along with others, are aimed at creating good jobs for Minnesotans in an industry that has as its mission to save lives, diminish suffering, reduce our country's dependence on oil, and generally improve our quality of life. Thank you, and I stand by ready to answer any questions as you would wish.
Are there any questions from the committee? Well, I will thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, you did a very good job last year. You have any of those particular proposals that you brought forth in Senator Locke's bill. Hopefully we can get amendments for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the two committees, I'm very happy to be here this afternoon. and I'm very pleased to that you're here. Thank you for coming. Thank you. I'm Dale Wallstrom. I am the CEO of the Bio Business Alliance of Minnesota. I've spent quite a bit of time with many of you over the last few years, and I just want to say I've gained an unbelievable appreciation for the complexity of your job. I can't say I want to have to debate the issues to love what you do all the time. My objective here today is to establish context for the rest of the next hour. It's context in the sense of a larger picture of what we're trying to, of where we believe Minnesota needs to be moving to protect and to grow our life science community and our life science industry, in a context in which you can place the rest of the testimony that you're going to hear this afternoon. I have two slides to present. That is because Representative Mahoney has been adamant about coaching me to make it short, to the point, and clear. And with two slides, I feel like I'm at least we have a good start anyway. The first slide is a slide that's up here. You have a handout in your packet because it's really easy for you to read. The first slide is representative of how we view the efforts to try to grow this and create a community that either is or will continue to be as industry evolves and as knowledge evolves. That will be a community that could be successful in the life science industries. We as a state have a lot of resources available to us. It's a matter of organizing them and understanding how to gain access to them. The way to look at this slide, and again, this is a contextual slide. If you start at the top, and I know it's complex, and I'm sure all of you in the audience who have worked with PR firms are all gasping at the moment. I know who Dwayne is. At the top box represents the private sector. What we've done is divide the Minnesota industries, life science industries, into six different sub-industries. You can read what they are. This is really the world of the private sector. This is where companies are created, jobs are created, tax base is created, etc. It's where the economic well-being of that portion of industry, of jobs is founded. This area, fundamentally, if you have a mature industry, it pretty much runs by itself. And the attitude is, can government stay out? We've got it under control and it can run. When you have a new industry, such as renewable energy, there needs to be a lot of support from various public and the public sector. Many of the speakers will talk about different aspects of that, so I'm not going to go into any more detail on that at this moment, but we'll talk about that at the session, I'm sure. The bottom line, the very bottom piece, and actually the three sections of this graph below the top, all represent what we believe to be community level capability. By that we mean that it's things that a community brings to bear, either to the academic sector or to the public sector, to help a community be strong and able to compete on a global basis. If you drop down to the very bottom line, what we call foundational capability, these are things that are really the world of what we believe to be the world of the public sector. In fact, are in the heart of what you do to a very large extent. Things like K-12 education, university and trade schools, etc., infrastructure, things that including specific policies that help to advance and grow different aspects of the top three boxes, the top three categories, fall underneath those foundational capabilities. And they're important because they are the basis on which everything else is built. The green line, the green section, represents to us primarily the area dominated by the academic sector. We call these enabling knowledge clusters. On this specific slide, it represents those knowledge clusters that are very important to supporting growth of the life science industry as we move into the next 10 and 20 years and beyond. This is, as I said, is dominated by the academic community. We depend on the academic community to be able to provide research, workforce, all the things necessary to
allow a community to have a language and a capability to grow in this area. The third and final section, I believe, is in the middle. We call those commercialization catalysts. Those commercialization catalysts, and this is not all inclusive, but this is a good start. These are catalysts that, again, a community has to have in place. Some of them come from the private sector, some come from the academic sector, but they're things that allow good ideas or knowledge to be transferred from the academic or private sector into. Maybe I'll shut this off. Can you hear me all right?
I'm not sure you can. No.
Let's try it again. Sorry about that. How about now? Anyway, this section represents those capabilities and that are necessary to take knowledge and turn it into jobs and job creation. Today, you're going to hear from five different speakers or five different testifiers. The circles represent the areas that they'll be talking about. We'd like to be able to share something about every one of these sections, because you look at this piece of paper or this page is almost like a jigsaw puzzle. And it's not like you can have one without the other. You have to have some level of capability in all of them. So the five people who are going to be presenting today that Life Science Alley has compiled testifiers are going to talk about the different areas that are circled. Specifically, Kurt Kinghorn and Dan Baker are going to talk about different funding mechanisms, because the funding mechanisms for Minnesota, we need help. The Jay Schrankler is going to talk about an academic tech transfer, and he's also going to touch on acceleration and incubation. And I also know that Randy Olson is in the room. He represents leadership for UEL, which I know you're helping to fund. That is an acceleration incubation capability. Brent Ellison is going to talk about pharma and biologics. It's a very important area to us because for two reasons. One, it's a very high growth area. It's growing about 18, depending on which literature you look at, it's 18 to 22% growth rate right now. Very high salaries, very high rate of movement. Mark Ongs is going to come up and talk about a convergent technology. It's actually a form of biologics that can help to change our industry here in the state. It's win-win successful. It also represents a convergence between medical devices and pharma. That's why I drew the circle crossing over both. If Mark is successful, what he's working on can represent either a very positive opportunity for our state, or it can also create problems for our medical device industry, because it's an alternative solution to some of the implantable technology that's out there. The point being, this is the world that these people are living in, and these people are playing in different aspects of this overall system. And over the course of the coming years, we'd like to talk about all of these. We'd like to be able to lay out some of the things we think we need, some of the things that the state is strong in. The key to what we're trying to accomplish is to understand what Don Gerhardt references, Destination 2025, is where are these markets going, where are we strong enough, where are we prepared to dominate, and where can we make strategic investments that will help us to be able to compete long-term without long-term. And with that, I will end, except to say we have one more slide, which is this one. I'd like to just close by saying that Jeremy Lenz, who works with Bio Business Alliance, is leading an initiative right now looking at how to create a statewide community. One of the great things about this science of a life science is that there is as much going on in the greater Minnesota area as there is in the metro area. And what is good investments that are appropriately positioned for the metro are good for the greater Minnesota, and things that are for the greater Minnesota are good for the metro. It goes back to what Dr. Joyner said this morning. This is not a zero-sum game kind of relationship. It all adds up. So with that, I too would welcome questions later on, or now, whatever you prefer, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, we're running a little late, so unless there's a need for a question, I will call up the next testifier.
Mr. Chair and the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Jay Schrankler. I'm with the University of Minnesota, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Office for Technology Commercialization, and more commonly in the academic world, that's known as the Technology Transfer Office of the university. And almost every big research university has one of these offices. I'm new to the university. I've been there 6 months, and I came out of a 27-year career in industry. So what I'd like to talk about today, first of all, is where we see opportunities in tech transfer at the university. And what you see on the first slide that's in front of you, I think is really just a snapshot of what we can accomplish at the university. I'm really excited about this. We started a venture center at the university about 2 years ago. Doug Johnson, who's still at the university, founded the Venture Center, and out of that Venture Center we have some really good startups in the works. I want to give you some examples of those today. We just spun out a company called Rossi that's able to diagnose treatments for neurological disorders, including Alzheimer's and other diseases. And that technology has been spun out. The startup company Rossi is located here in the Twin Cities. We also started a company called Recon Robotics. You may have heard about them in the press. They manufacture little robots that you can use for surveillance and security. They're headquartered in Minnetonka. Our biggest deal at the university, and I'll get to this a little later, is a drug called Zygen. And that drug is used to treat AIDS patients all over the world. It's our biggest license deal at the university, and has a huge, profound impact on AIDS patients today. Another technology that was licensed out to an existing company here in Minnesota is the PRRS vaccine. PRRS is a disease that pigs get, basically, and it destroys about $600 million worth of swine a year in the U.S. And this is actually a cure for that disease. We have a lot of agricultural inventions, of course, the most famous being the Honeycrisp apple. I'm sure you all know what that is if you haven't eaten one. And then one company that isn't on here is a rather unique one called MR Instruments. This is a company that was spun out of the university about 5 years ago. They make coils for magnetic resonance imaging. They're the only independent company left standing in that industry today. They've all been acquired by the bigger Siemens and GEs of the world. We think this will be a tremendous winner for the state. Ultimately, this company wants to stay independent, and being the Switzerland of the industry, so to speak, we have really high hopes for them. The university, since I've been there, I've really been able to do a pretty good assessment. How good are we, and how well are we positioned? We certainly, I think, are well positioned to work with all of you, other research institutions, nonetheless, of which the Mayo Clinic is one, and the private sector. And that's one thing that I'm trying to bring to the university is how can we be better partners? How can we work better with industry and faculty and the state government? We are consistently ranked among the top universities in North America today. We have, if you look at our royalty income, we're number five. That's pretty tremendous. When you look at other universities, how many of the hundreds there are of research universities, we're number five in terms of being able to commercialize our technology as measured by royalty incomes. And then our IP pipeline. I have to say that it's very strong. It's been ranked very high, according to the scientists. That was in 2005. We've made some changes in our office since I came on board, and that pipeline, I can assure you, is getting even stronger. But we're committed today not only to license these technologies, but to create at least 3 to 4 quality startup companies in Minnesota per year. And we believe that's a really strong approach. So the next question is, what could you possibly do to help us? On a number of fronts, certainly supporting the partnerships and other collaborations and helping facilitate that, biosciences, the bonding authority, the Mayo partnership that we have, and any other kind of initiatives that you'll hear about today. We certainly are a center of excellence on the globe for medical devices. Any kind of interdisciplinary research that we can get going with companies, I'll talk about that, is important. The third item on here is renewable energy. There was a nice conference in San Francisco a couple weeks ago where one of the lead venture capital companies, Kozel Ventures, mentioned Minnesota as a potential new Silicon Valley, so to speak, of renewable energy. And we need to continue the IRE efforts that we have going on with the state. That's really important. It's led to a couple of really leading-edge inventions, I should tell you, that we have a significant amount of intellectual property that has been developed as a result of that. And then finally, all the agricultural that happens here, all the development, all the IP that goes into our state's ag economy as well. As far as supporting economic development initiatives, we really have to thrive on having a very friendly business environment here, and one that's friendly to startup companies. And I think the most important thing, if you look, is what is most important for these companies to access to capital. And so the ability for us to attract venture capital to the state is paramount. We can invent all these inventions all day long, but if we have no one to fund them, that's absolutely key. As a caveat on that, I'd like to talk about a quick concept called the valley of death in trying to birth out new companies. What's happening in research today is that there's a lot of government funding for early stage research, and then you have this gap between that early stage product or invention and introduction into market. We call that the valley of death, and it really comes in the form of early stage funding. So we'd like to see any help we can get, and I'm sure my friends from industry would like to see, where can we attract more early stage investment. Right now, the university has to do some of that on our own with some of the proceeds we get from our licensing. And then finally, help supporting tech transfer at the university is really important. We believe we're one of the key elements of creating that strong industry here going forward. So where do we see best practices? Recently, I took a trip to Madison, Wisconsin. Wisconsin's become a very strong research university. You probably know this. One of the reasons is because they have a foundation called the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. This is an independent nonprofit organization that does the tech transfer work for the university. And since vitamin D was commercialized back in 1925, this entity was formed. They have a $2 billion endowment now. They donate $70 million a year in research to the University of Wisconsin from that endowment. And all the tech transfer proceeds get plowed back into that endowment. It's a beautiful model, and it's one thing that's very successful. And I think if we could start that effort here in Minnesota, it would be spectacular. And it definitely is a model of success. That's an example of a university. If you look at a region, the Research Triangle Park in North Carolina is a really nice example of how you can make the industry academic partnership work. I think it's a model that could absolutely work here. And of course, we have the other three areas probably most of us are familiar with. San Diego is becoming a real hotbed of biotech. Boston and San Francisco, the Bay Area, have always been. So the question is next, so where do we want to go? What do we want to do? I probably was part of the process that the university started in transforming its tech transfer office. I think there was a feeling a few years ago, maybe this wasn't optimized, it could be done better. I came on board 6 months ago. Since then, we have revamped the staff. Everyone in our office today has industry experience. They've worked in industry. Many of them have worked in startups, so they understand what it's like to be on the other side. And we want to be more business-friendly, more government-friendly, and definitely more value-based as we go forward. I mentioned the AIDS drug earlier. One of the issues that we have in our office is that 95, maybe even 97% of our income comes from the one license, and that license expires. In the U.S., the patents expire in 2009, and so we're going to start to see a decline in that. And so we don't have time on our side, so to speak. We've got to accelerate these efforts, and that's what we're here to do. And then finally, we need to create better relationships. And we're working on that already. Since I've been on board, I think we've entertained about 15 different Minnesota companies that come into our office. We show them what our pipeline is, and we're in strong collaborations with them. So I'm happy to answer and entertain any questions that you have.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Franker, I'm just wondering, at a time of very scarce resources, I think what you're asking, at least the tax committee, to do is create, spend some money to create some incentives for business development that have quite a bit of risk. And putting state resources like this, when we don't, frankly, we don't have enough money to make sure that vulnerable people are being cared, taken care of, missing homes. We have schools around the states that have kids sitting in class with jackets on because school budgets are so tight. And those, that's just the political realities that we live in at the Capitol these days. And so I'm just wondering, I mean, I don't want to help, but I'm wondering how much outreach is being done, not to the business community, but to the venture capital community, to get them, you know, rather than put, I'm just wondering how much outreach we're doing without the little carrot from the legislature.
Sure. Well,
to the venture capital community.
Okay, thank you for the question, Senator. I think your points are well taken. We're doing a lot of outreach. Not only, we have an effort going on in philanthropic venturism, so we have some philanthropic donations. We're trying to attract the university as a method of uncommitted funds to venture, to start ventures. I think the best way, one of the best ways, and Mr. Wallstrom mentioned this, is to create these accelerators. And the University Enterprise Lab is one example, and I know Randy Olson's here in the audience who runs that office. And we're located in that facility as well. And this is a partnership between the industry and government where we're looking to just house businesses and just provide that environment, so to speak. And you know, hopefully that's a way we can do this without having to deprive others of these critical needs that you speak of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Skinkler, the issue of looking at these models, whether the Wisconsin model that they've developed in the pre-situation or the research triangle, what kind of internal process is going on at the university to reconfigure themselves by looking at what's going to come back to the university and how might they think about the other?
Well, we're actually starting down that path of how can we become this world-class location and build the model we need to build. One good thing about our office, the office that I run, the Tech Transfer, we're completely self-funded. We have no outside, no state funding. We're funded off the proceeds of the money that we bring in. I think right off the bat, that's a good model to have because we're really incentivized to make something happen. So that's a good piece. The other piece of the model that we're looking at is can we take some of that excess funding that we bring in and put it into an endowment where we can make seed funds. That's another best practice. And probably the third leg of that stool is how can we partner in the region? So with the Mayo, as an example, the Minnesota Mayo Partnership, that's how RTP, or the Research Triangle Institute, was in that whole region, the park was formed. So I think we're hitting this on all fronts. The philanthropic fund, the funding front, and then also the partnership front with Mayo being where we're starting.
Okay.
Thank you. I just wanted to, you've been very positive, and I really appreciated the information. I wonder if there are any barriers, we talked about investments that the state can make, given financial resources. Are there any barriers that the state has in place that we can take a look at, or
Are there any barriers? I think probably one of the things that, and I'll give you an example of one company that was started out of the university. So it's getting companies to stay here. So how can we do that? I don't know that I can propose an answer for you today, but I've seen at least one really nice startup end up in Silicon Valley, and so this had to do with Arch Venture Capital that came in and invested in a company called Innovalite, which then relocated to the Bay Area. And we still have a lot of day-to-day interaction with them. So I guess the one thing is, how do we, one barrier is how do we retain these startup companies and prevent them from moving out of state? I think that's that would be, if I were to pick on one thing, that would really be it.
Senator Rodin?
Thank you. Mr. Trankler, you're basically talking about the intellectual property
Yes, to create the environment that they want to stay here.
And my question, though, is have you developed relationships with some initiatives that are already put into place, such as the $35 million that's been appropriated to the next generation energy board for renewable energy initiatives. Are you looking into that? Are you
Yes, we are. And on the state level, on renewable energy, we're tied at the hip with IRE, the Institute on Renewable Energy and the Environment. And all the research dollars that have been poured into IRE are being benefited in terms of intellectual property. We have received just last year alone 57 invention disclosures that came out of the IRE funding. So to that point, yes, we're doing as much as we possibly can to take advantage of those programs, which are invaluable, by the way. We need to keep those going.
And members, I will tell you right now that last spring I had asked the Minnesota Biobusiness Alliance to put a comparison together of what other states are doing. And off the top of my head, I'm hoping that the analysis will take the cold chill that I get every time I see what other states are doing, from Ohio to Texas to Florida, Arizona. And I've asked them this morning, just this morning, to individually find legislators and make appointments with them and go over the chart, so to speak. I don't know exactly the form that it's taking, but to tell us what is being done in other states and what we've done, not just to say that Texas is it's a $2.5 billion and we've got a $35 million comparison. I mean, there's got to be some breakdown. We need to find out a little bit better so that we're going to make decent policy. So hopefully they will make appointments with you all and give you more in depth that I don't think we can go into right here. And we'll hopefully have a further discussion in February. Are there any other questions? Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And with that, I'd like to ask the, I should have done this sooner, but Representative Bruce and Representative Peppin, like introduce yourself to the committee, to the audience.
Sure, I'm Representative Joyce Peppin. And I serve House District 32A, which includes the Hanover, Corcoran, Hansen, Rogers, and Maple Grove home of Boston Scientific.
Yes, I'm a resident of Kind View from Owatonna, Minnesota, and Southeast Minnesota.
Thank you. I think the next person that is going to testify is Steve Perfect.
Which one is yours?
12. I've been told I'm soft spoken, so I'm going to move that a little bit closer to you.
Thank you. Could you identify yourself for the record?
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Kurt Kinghorn. I'm president and CEO of a medical device company called Anoka Biomedical. I'm also president of a sort of a hobby law firm called Sirius Strategic.
Hobby farms, but not hobby.
Yeah. I want to get a little background because it relates to what we're doing here. I'm former chief patent counsel for neurological and cardiac surgery business at Medtronic, and they sent me to get an MBA and came back and made me general counsel of surgical technologies business, which was Medtronic's entrepreneurial businesses. And so that whetted my appetite for entrepreneurialism, and so I left Medtronic to go start Anoka Biomedical, which is a little medical device company that makes devices that makes it easier to do cardiac bypass surgery. We can take what takes 80 minutes down to 4 minutes, so which has a lot of benefits, we think. And so anyway, while that's going, I have a little law practice on the side, dealing mostly with intellectual property and helping small and startup businesses, individuals. So what I'm going to tell you is my own experience, but also what I know from talking with my clients, all of whom are small or individuals. So you may also remember I testified before the House and Senate Tax Committees in the spring and talked a little bit of my experience. I'm going to update that a little bit because it relates directly to what we're talking about here. So let me first just say the hardest thing for getting businesses started in med tech and high tech is that first stage money, that early seed money. Why? Because it's unbelievably risky, and people are averse to risk, of course. So where do you go to get money? You go dig into your own pockets and take second mortgages on your house, and you do all that sort of thing, which I've done. And when that runs out, you go either to angel investors, which are rich people who have a lot of money and are willing to help you out, or you go to VC funds. And so let me just tell you a little bit about the VC market here in Minnesota. They had a fairly vigorous VC market during the dot-com bubble. I think Minnesota took the dot-com bubble burst harder than most other states. And so the VC market, at least as far as it relates to startup companies, virtually dried up. And so hardly any money left in-state from VC money. Where did it go? It went to the coast. And so as I go around and try and raise money, which is a lot of what you do when you're president, I talk to people that have money, and they say, well, okay, I used to have money in XYZ company here. It's now go talk to Arch Capital, we heard, or some of these others that are off on the coast. So go talk to them if you want to get my money. So secondly, so having done that, I talked to several, and what they inevitably want you to do is move. And so I've had several offers to move out to Boston or Atlanta, neither of which I wanted to do. I have a family here, and I kind of like to stay here. And so even though it's very enticing when they dangle that money in front of you, we just said no. We'll try and make it without, at least for the time being. Which leads us to the angel investors, and so these are the guys that have money, rich people have money. And so you go talk to them, and one of the things that's sort of interesting about that group in Minnesota, I think, and maybe this is a Midwest thing, but they're relatively averse to risk. And big surprise.
That's a Midwestern thing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I'm joking when we say that, but in point of fact, I think that they are maybe more averse to risk than people on the coast. And so what they say to me, and I've heard this literally 100 times, is if you go prove it, come back to me and I'll help you out. And I'll say, well, help me to prove it, and I'll treat you right. And that conversation doesn't go very far here in Minnesota, I'll just say it. And so, by the way, that 25% tax credit that y'all passed last year, that got me old, that would make a huge difference to these guys here in dealing with that risk. And so one of the things I'm going to advise you at the end is go ahead and redo that if you can, because that really does carry the day there. So anyway, in this environment of, well, if I can't get money here, I got to get it somewhere, you start looking around. And ended up the state of Ohio, which I'll know, how do I get this to go forward?
Forward here.
20 yet. Okay, so the state of Ohio ended up with $1.2 billion from their tobacco money. And so they decided to use that for economic redevelopment. Now, they have problems that we don't have with rust belt stuff, but nevertheless, they decided to use $1.2 billion over 10 years. And they ended up authorizing already $200 million for the year that we're in now. And $60 million of that went to medical device companies, and it went to Cleveland Clinic, which is number one cardiac center in the world. And so they went on sort of a beauty contest and actually sent brokers out into the world, and including here in Minnesota, and identified companies that have promising technologies. So I got invited down there, and the first thing I said is, I don't want to move. And they said, well, okay, fine. And nevertheless, show us what your thing is. So I did the dog and pony show, as did probably other people all across the country. And we ended up being one of about eight people that were beauty contest winners in this. And so we ended up getting an initial $500,000 grant, at least offered, a $500,000 grant. With possibility for quite a bit more. Now, what it requires on my part is a 2-to-1 match. I have to raise $1 million to get the full $500,000, and it requires me to spend it in Ohio. And so therein is the danger here. So it's pretty clear that their philosophy was that old Arab proverb, if you can get the nose of the camel in the tent, pretty soon you have the whole camel in the tent. And so as we've been dealing with them, and by the way, I haven't taken them up on that offer because I haven't yet been able to find a way to effectively do that, but it's very enticing to get that money, and it's a promise for others as well. By the way, just as another interesting little factor, the state of Ohio has someone they call a tech czar. And if you call them up and say, here's my problem, I need to raise money, I need to do whatever, they are amazing about finding people who can find you a place to put a bit office, or here's the programs and that sort of thing. And anyway, it's a very useful thing as we were considering this, to be able to go to one place and be able to get information. Related to that, Ohio University has an MBA program, and I got hooked up with them, and two other students did a MBA for a project for credit, looked at all the sources of financing available to companies like mine, startup companies, and prepared a very detailed 32-page analysis of that. If anyone's interested, I'll be glad to email it to you, but it is just amazing. I'm going to just show you a couple of the highlights here. Now, this is busy, I understand, but instead of one tax credit, the second from the bottom one relates to the 25% tax credit we had for starting up businesses. They have a variety of them related to all kinds of tax credits for starting up, including R&D and planning for facility, that sort of thing, and some exemptions. So quite a bit more tax credits than we have here. Their 25% tax credit, similar to ours, has a cap of $130,000, but otherwise it looks a lot like the one that we passed last year. And then they have a huge number of loans, low and no interest loans, that are available to help startup. And like I say, without going into the details of it, you know, that's pretty attractive, low interest money there. So I haven't taken advantage of that. Now, here's the update part from when I talked to you in the spring. I told you the other coast, which I haven't talked about at all, is California, and in particular Silicon Valley. There's a huge amount of money and infrastructure and enticement there. I did succumb to the California money, and so I have full-time engineers out in California using California money right now. And so my engineering full-time work is out in California. The rest of what we're doing is here in the Twin Cities. Now, I prefer to keep it all here, but when you're faced with either going out of business or going forward, now, just without sounding too maudlin here, I took a huge risk to leave an extremely high-paying and good job at Medtronic to do this, and I'm quite a ways down the path now, and glad I did. But, you know, it's still risky, and given a choice between going out of business and moving to California, which is not my choice at all, you know, fortunately I've been able to put that off, but I just want to let you know that's a challenge that I face and every other small startup guy faces. I can tell you that two of my clients who have gone out of business because they couldn't leave Minnesota for family reasons and yet couldn't come over that early stage investment, and just some really cool high-tech technology stuff, very credentialed people, and we just couldn't do it. So anyway, we would like to stay here, and so I guess what I would suggest to you is looking at the whole notion of tax credits, and I realize that you're taking from Peter to Rob Paul there a little bit, but in some sense, if you don't do that, people like me are going to move, and then when we're successful, like I hope we are, I'd rather us be successful in Minnesota and y'all get the benefit of that than us in Ohio or California and there's no piece of that that's here. So I'd say the tax credits and the loans. I would also look at doing something, if you could, related to that one source ability to be able to come to some and get some information. It sounds maybe too small, but it makes a huge difference when you're wandering in the wilderness and you have no idea what's even there, and the fact that you could get pointed to someone and say, okay, here's what we have and here's what we can do to help. So anyway, that's all I have to say.
Members, any questions? I appreciate you coming today. I have heard about the Ohio program. I have not seen it in print, and hopefully staff will get it, and I will make sure it gets passed on.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on the list is Mr. Dan Baker with the SBIR program. I will tell you we've got about 20 minutes, so we're
going
to have to get the abbreviated.
Okay. Well, Representative Mahoney, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Dan Baker. I'm not with the SBIR program, but I have benefited, and our company has benefited from it. I'm president of NVE Corporation, which is based in Eden Prairie. We have approximately 50 employees. We're a small business. We specialize in nanotechnology called Spintronics. So I don't have graphics here, but I have a very small graphic. This is one of our devices in the red circle there. It's approximately 1 millimeter square, a little less than a 16th of an inch. And this replaces a mechanical component that would go into very small medical devices such as ICDs, implantable cardioverter defibrillators like the kind made by St. Jude, or into pacemakers or hearing aids. So we make these right here in Minnesota, and we're proud to say that there are probably thousands or maybe tens of thousands in people walking around here making their lives better. We have received a lot of our funding through SBIRs and STTRs, which are government programs geared for small businesses to either demonstrate feasibility or develop technology. And much of our technology has been developed with the assistance of these programs. We've received more than $38 million at last count in over 100 SBIR and STTR contracts, including the NSF, Navy, Air Force, DARPA, DITRA, MDA, Navy, OSD, NASA, NIST, and some of these acronyms I hadn't even heard of. But there are some fairly big programs in DOD and elsewhere, and we found that they are surprisingly easy to work with in many cases and share many of the goals that we do. They require commercialization plans. So in addition to doing something that will hopefully help the government, for example, we have programs that might help detect pathogens for biological warfare, Agent 7 Forbid, which is of obvious interest to the military, but also they have clinical applications. And so part of what we're required to do is provide a commercialization plan for each of these contract proposals. And that's one of the factors that the government agencies weigh. And we've been reasonably successful in commercializing them. Not 100%, but many of the devices that we're selling now came out of that. And we've successfully transitioned, in fact, from being almost entirely dependent on research contracts to now where 90% of our revenues are from products. And our product sales have increased more than fivefold in the past 5 years. We're very much indebted to the DEED SBIR assistance program under the leadership of Betsy Lulz and Minnesota Project Innovation when they had the that SBIR support mission, and also the congressional, these are federal programs, so our congressional district, our congressional representatives, Senate and House have been also helpful in that. We do expect to outgrow our SBIR designation soon, as I mentioned to you prior to this meeting, which is a good thing, but it means that we have to compete more in the broad area of government contracts, and an expansion of the SBIR office's capabilities would be most welcome, and that kind of support is offered in other states. It's difficult for smaller companies to compete with large defense contractors, even if the companies might have a better way to do it. It's difficult without the contacts or without the kind of lobbying budgets that larger companies can have to get our case known, and we believe that the state could be helpful in that, much as they have been in SBIRs. So that's one thing we will do as we hopefully outgrow our small business designation. The other is that we also fund a lot of R&D ourselves right here in Minnesota. And Minnesota's research tax credit helps with that for companies at our stage. For very early stage companies that are losing money, they probably aren't paying taxes anyway. And perhaps for later stage companies, it might not be as important. In our stage, it is. We're pleased that Minnesota's credit encourages small company R&D with a higher credit. The credit is 5% for the first $2 million of R&D, and then 2.5% after that. So that does provide an incentive for smaller companies to do their R&D here in Minnesota. I would point out, however, that what the industry that we compete in is the semiconductor industry primarily, and the leading semiconductor cluster states, as they're called, that is states with companies where we compete, have higher credits and higher incentives. California permits a 15% credit. Arizona's is 20%. Texas has a 5% credit, but that's a lower tax state to begin with. One sidelight is we actually did move to Texas for a while and moved back. And that was despite some of the advantages, the financial advantages that Texas offered. But we find Minnesota an excellent place to do business and a great quality of life, and that's worth something as well. I'm not a native Minnesotan, but we always tell people the climate isn't that bad.
Just the driving.
It's just right. Once you're inside, it's fine. So raising the first bracket research credit would help Minnesota smaller companies to compete and keep their R&D here in Minnesota. And I think you heard a story with the previous speaker that research and engineering is fairly mobile. We recruit from all over the country, in fact, all over the world, for top researchers, and we've been very successful in getting them here to Minnesota. And we'd like to continue that. But in conclusion, I would like to thank you for your support of Minnesota small businesses and bio businesses. We do find Minnesota a great place to do business. We have a strong workforce, a high quality of life, and our employees are proud to of the contributions that they've made to Minnesota's economy, and we're proud of the contribution that we've made to health of people here in Minnesota and all over the world. And I hope that NBE can come before you in the not too distant future as a large Minnesota-based company.
We would like that an awful lot. And up until about 3 days prior to closing up the bill and sending it over to the governor's office, you're off that that help with the SBI was in there and all of a sudden dropped out. And wasn't in on those negotiations, so I won't comment any further.
On the research tax credit, I just had a meeting yesterday and haven't had a chance to talk to Senator Bob about this. That in Minnesota, I do know about the Cheney Act, and I believe that we spend $17 million a year. So the Senate Council is researching this for a possible bill, because the 15% in California is certainly something that we need to look at in terms of, you know, this state and what we're doing with the market. I believe Minnesota is among the lowest in the country in terms of that research tax credit. So I'm looking into it, and we certainly have some people who are very interested in it. I have 3M not in my district, but I guess I represent most employees in the world in terms of my zip code. So certainly 3M and your company has a great deal in common, I'm sure.
I think you found a testifier for this particular
thing. Because I think we're looking at, we need to reward good behavior. And this might be a way, but I hope Senator Bach will at least listen to me on the issue.
Well, thank you.
I didn't have a chance to talk, but I had a visitor yesterday, and we started to kind of outline possible proposals, at least for discussion.
Oh, I appreciate your support, Senator. If I might put in a plug also, though, that having a higher rate at the lower investments helps smaller businesses and small companies when they're in the formative stages, and hopefully then they're, you know, the camel is in the tent here in Minnesota as the companies grow. So that 5% at the lower bracket, or if there's a way to raise all of the brackets or raise the lower bracket, that would sure help companies like us.
Any other questions? Thank you,
Representative.
I think we're going to try and get Mark Humble there.
Yes, my name is Mark Ons. I'm co-founder and president of a startup called AC Therapeutics, or ACTX. Thank you very much for the chance to talk to you. I've been invited to speak to spinouts, and I've been asked to talk about what is a spinout, why should the state be interested in funding it, and how should they do it. And I'll keep this very brief because I know you're behind time, and and that's the way I'm prepared to speak very, very briefly here. So to me, the definition of a spin-out is an asset, a non-performing or underperforming asset that is disgorged or spun out from its owners, and it's sufficient to be the beginning of a new venture and start a new company. And that to me is a spin-out. And in my case, until recently, just recently, last month, I ran the new business development efforts for Boston Scientific's Interventional Cardiology Division in Maple Grove for the last 12 years. And back in 2003, we were very interested in cell therapy for the recovery of heart function after a heart attack. And one of the efforts we started was AC Therapeutics. And as you know, we had a significant shift in strategy and bought Guidant and took on significant debt, and that really reprioritized a lot of our budget monies, and AC Therapeutics was therefore, despite support from the CEO all the way down throughout all the ranks, AC Therapeutics was not able to meet the budget priorities. And therefore, it was a prime candidate to be spun out, and that's why I'm here now to talk to you about and perhaps shed some light on why the state could play a role in funding such efforts like this. First of all, if I was in your shoes, and I've never been in the state legislation, so I apologize if I'm underestimating some of your challenges, but if I was in your roles and I was looking for how I would invest small amounts of money, let's be frank, very modest amounts of money, because you do have other priorities, but with the goal of stimulating growth, I would look at what I call the edges of the community's wherewithal or core businesses. In other words, I wouldn't necessarily focus on what already is a strength here, like medical devices, because the private industry does quite well there, and with modest amount of money, it may not be a good use of your money because that's already being done well with the private industry. I also wouldn't target it to brand new industries. For example, I'll just make this up, integrated circuit manufacturing, Silicon Valley. I would not necessarily target there because that would be a little bit naive with such small amounts of money to recreate a competitive effort against San Francisco Bay Area, for example. On the other hand, what does make sense is augmenting what already is a core competency here in the Twin Cities. So and almost by definition, spin-outs sort of meet that criteria because, first of all, the asset is within, I'm assuming this, we're talking about a Minnesota-based company. It already is in a company here. So, for example, Boston Scientific wouldn't have an integrated circuit design that they're willing to spin out because they don't have any competency in that. But they do have competency in this AC Therapeutics, for example, which is a combination of medical devices and biotechnology. So it's growing at the edges. And so by definition, it makes a lot of sense that this could be very precise investments for the state of Minnesota. It also often comes with a champion. Companies have a lot of things to do. They don't. It actually takes quite a bit of legal effort to spin out the technology, and I won't explain why, but it does. And so there actually is a lot of disincentives to spin it out. It's better just to sit on it. And plus, who wants to be known as the manager who spun out the next billion-dollar opportunity? And so there's always a fear, I'd rather just sit on it and let it die than let someone else make me look silly. So to get it out, it takes a champion, and that's really valuable for new ideas, is that you have to have someone behind it. It's just not the idea. And private industry really doesn't do a good job. Mr. Schrankler spoke of the Valley of Death, and that's in particular for very early stages. Whereas venture capitalists, you might think, might be very good at doing that, There's plenty of instances where they have done it, but in a broad sense, they actually avoid it. Why? Because they have investors they want to satisfy. They have, and they typically promise them a 30% annual return on their money in a 3 to 5 year time frame. Early stages may not fit that mold. And then lastly, it doesn't take a lot of money to continue it. We are talking early stage. We are talking about $1.5 million. So absolutely, that's a lot of money, but in the realm of business investment, that is a modest amount of money. And if it's successful, then there's plenty of venture capitalists and business ventures that would like to take it further and commercialize it. It's that critical very first step that the state could play a role. So how would you do it? Which is my last topic. First of all, you need some guidance. Just because it's a spin-off doesn't mean it's a good idea. And there's probably more ideas than there is money. And how do you do that? The BioBusiness Alliance is certainly, I've been impressed with Dale and his efforts there in helping to identify where to put the money. So leveraging those resources, I think you've already got in place. I wouldn't put it all in one basket. At the same time, I wouldn't do what we call a peanut butter approach, where you spread it thinly through a lot of investments. I think you have to make a few choices and do it well. And then, again, to be repetitive, I would limit it to investments that augment the resources, the core competencies, the advantages you have here in the Twin Cities to grow businesses, at the edges. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Are there any questions from the committee? I appreciate you coming today. It is interesting to hear that particular perspective, and I'm sure that there is a bill in the wings of some sort that will address that. So you may get a call sometime after February 12th.
Terrific.
Thank you very much. We're supposed to end at 4. I'm going to just hold the room for a little bit longer and see if I can get something on the general business climate from Brett Albertson. How am I pronouncing it badly?
Mr. Chair, we don't have another group pushing in behind us, so you can go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brent Eilertsen. A Norwegian name.
Right.
I am Associate General Counsel, so I will try to make this short. As a lawyer, of course, I've got some tension there. I am Associate General Counsel at Upshur Smith Laboratories, which must be the other corporation that is out of Maple Grove.
Yeah,
we are right down the road from Boston Scientific. I have been asked to come here to speak to the general business climate, and I think otherwise prove that there is life in the pharmaceutical industry in Minnesota. We are one of the larger employers, especially Minnesota-based employers, in the western suburbs, and been in Minnesota since 1919. Got over 20 significant product lines, all sorts of good stuff going on at Upshur Smith. A lot more going on in the future. There has been a history of success in the pharmaceutical industry in Minnesota. It gets significantly overshadowed by our device friends, and of course, in this particular day and age, things are converging. So device with the drug-coated stents, for example, a lot of convergence in that area. Biotech is booming, and so there should be, and as we've heard today, there is a lot of interest in what we do, and hope has been here, and who remains, Novartis Nutritionals, SEMA, Orphan, MGI, Upshur Smith, obviously, Paddock, 3M Pharmaceuticals, which unfortunately we lost, PDL. Some of these, again, are in various stages of coming and going, but a lot's been going on. I think there are a lot of exciting opportunities. We heard from the University of Minnesota. Upshur Smith has a presence at the University Enterprise Labs. We are looking to expand that presence so that, again, we can work collaboratively with the university, which we've done for years, working specifically with the College of Pharmacy. We've hosted postdocs and interns, and we've had a great relationship with them forever. We are embarking on a new relationship, I guess we'll call it, with the university. As you've heard, they are expressing a desire to be more friendly to industry, and it's difficult to do in the IP arena, but we are confident and are very close to entering into some relationships and ongoing relationships and support for the university to help drive development and innovation in the drug delivery sphere in particular, but with respect to other drug initiatives as well. So there's a lot of things to be excited about, we're very glad to be here. We don't have any intention to move to North Carolina or San Francisco anytime soon. With respect to what we would look for as an industry to maybe help us out a bit, maybe to lessen the barriers that somebody mentioned, barriers. There are barriers out there. There are potential barriers coming in. A lot of hot issues in the pharmaceutical industry. You know, you see a lot of big pharma, a lot of issues that they have with failing to maybe properly promote their products, maybe improperly interacting with their investigators or doctors. Can't let the bad apple spoil it for the rest of us. Upshur Smith is a highly ethical and again very family oriented, privately held organization. So we like to think that we're driving on the straight and narrow here, and that there are certainly unintended consequences that come from jumping on the bandwagon of the popular legislation of the day. And a lot of states like to get into drug pedigree. They like to get into where are you spending your marketing money. What doctors are getting money from you. We don't want doctors to see sales reps. There's a lot of things going on out there in other states in particular that, to be honest, really would be a detriment to our company. It requires us to invest a ton of money that may or may not, we have, but we'd rather not spend in the compliance arena, at least with respect to, again, these major initiatives. You see California's got an e-pedigree initiative, and everybody, including Big Pharma, would say this is ridiculous, but they're saying, no, we're going to force you to do this, and it's a huge project. So I would ask that you consider as those issues come before your various committees and for you as individual legislators that you remember there is pharmaceutical industry in the state of Minnesota that some of these initiatives sound good, they maybe look good to the voters, but we really need to make sure we dig behind the scenes to make sure that we don't get into any of the unintended consequences of enacting some of that legislation. Part of the problem that you run into with increased state regulation in the pharmaceutical industry in particular, you look at states, again, like California, you look at states like Vermont. Upshur Smith, for example, and I know several other pharmaceutical companies as well, have made conscious decisions not to do business in Vermont. We do not sell products directly in Vermont. We don't have sales reps in Vermont. That is an unintended consequence of what I think they view as a robust compliance scheme. And I would suggest that that's not where Minnesota wants to go. Minnesota, actually, back in 92, enacted some marketing legislation that was about 14 years ahead of everybody else. Let's try and stay behind the pack instead of ahead of it. Some of the recruitment challenges we face, again, a lot of technology out east, a lot of technology out west. We need to at least broadcast the message that the state of Minnesota has a pharmaceutical presence, that there is incentive for scientists and the PhDs, the PharmDs, all these educated workers that they get great education here at universities and the local colleges here, and then of course they leave. We need to keep those folks in town, let them know pharmaceutical industry exists. It's not just device. Twin Cities is more than just 3M and Medtronic and Boston Scientific. That there are great little companies, great mid-sized companies that really would like to retain that talent. And certainly this goes well beyond anything that I can address, but making sure that taxes, the cost of living is competitive with the other companies or states, making sure that we have the incentives to lure venture capital back, to make sure we have the incentives to promote research and development. I heard again this morning University of Minnesota receives NIH grants that are significantly lower than other universities. And again, get the message out there. This doesn't have to be a device town only. There are other companies that are doing some great stuff in the pharmaceutical arena, and that investment and those dollars would be well spent. Unless you have any specific questions, I really am.
Yes, I'm wondering, you talked about specifically about compliance that the state has. Could you just talk a little bit more about what your mind needs to change or
what
happens in the area of compliance?
Yes. What we see in the industry is a progression of various compliance efforts. Minnesota really started the ball rolling back in, like I said, 1992 with tracking marketing spend, limiting the dollars you can spend when you visit doctors. And I'm not saying there's a problem per se with that concept if it's done reasonably, but now other states are getting into, they want to know, you know, which doctors you're detailing, how much money you're detailing, spending on those doctors, how much money you're paying your marketers to do the marketing that they do, how much money you're spending on mailing postcards into a state, how much money you're spending on sampling. We want to know, you know, what product you promoted to what doctor on what day. So again, there may be a reasonable solution here, but it's not to just throw these things in place because there's a public perception of you know, pharmaceutical companies making boatloads. Much money you're spending on sampling. We want to know, you know, what product you promoted to what doctor on what day. So again, there may be a reasonable solution here, but it's not to just throw these things in place because there's a public perception of you know, pharmaceutical companies making boatloads of money and not caring about the impact that their ethics might have on patients' well-being.
These are
currently moving through the states. In particular, there is some federal legislation. To the extent federal legislation preempts state legislation, and again, not just Minnesota, but I'm talking about, you know, the all the states. That would be, you know, something we would support. If there's going to be patchwork enforcement or patchwork compliance initiatives, let's have the Fed step in, impose something uniform over everybody so that we're all playing on the same level field. Minnesota, like I said, has the marketing disclosure law in place. My understanding is that there was some legislation introduced around future pedigree and analyzing the imposition of an electronic pedigree requirement, which tracks basically each unit of sale of our products or pharmaceutical products to the end user, so from the manufacturer to the end user. It's a huge initiative. You know, it requires sharing of information between different competitive organizations and wholesalers and pharmacies. So that would be a big one to look out for if you have the opportunity to assess whether to do that or not. I'd be happy to speak further on that, as well as any other initiative that would impact the pharmaceutical industry. It'd be nice, again, to keep, you know, we see MGI, I believe, is leaving, and PDL, we've apparently lost, and various others. It would be nice to grow the industry, because we, to be honest, we really have a good thing going with Dr. Smith, and let's keep going that way.
Mr. Ellison, you mentioned that Minnesota is lower receiving their share of the NIH grant. Is that not gotten better because of the collaboration between the Mayo and the U, or is there something that we need to do or they need to do?
You know, that's my comment is directed at this morning, I believe, is the keynote speaker or one of the early morning presentations. There was a reference to the fact that was it Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, various other universities, even in our area, get significantly more NIH funding than the University of Minnesota. I don't have any.
Okay. Yeah. My other question, I'm not sure if you can answer this either, is that are there any programs where,
besides NIH grants, are there some federal national dollars from state investment grants? I mean, that's just something that kind of, I know there was worked on the technology last year. I believe there is. I don't know enough.
I'm sorry, who? I'm sorry, who? Do you like to come to the group?
Not particularly,
no. Well, it's, you know, it's
It's not usually phrased that way, but so I was just being honest, brutally honest. In answer to your question, Senator, there are at least 10 states that do SBIR funding matches. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard a lot about the SEED initiative. And while that is geared for primarily outstate Minnesota, I know the organization that I represent, Lynn Osterman, on behalf of NMNANO, we're going to be asking you to consider doing that statewide, so that regardless of where the SBIR, either phase one or phase two success is, that we would also be able to incent those companies to apply for those funding by having a match through the state. Correct.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask a question. Thank you for holding the committee hearing today and for your advocacy on this issue as chair, and also to thank Don for inviting us to be here. Sometimes something legislators need to do is actually listen and learn from the committee for the past months. And also, just I want to make one comment. In my mind, there is no better way for us to get return on investment in the area of economic development. There's no better area than the biosciences. And having a chance to serve in the committee, I've certainly learned that. And also, something we've talked about, it does not happen here in Minnesota. It will happen somewhere else. And we'll miss the good jobs, the healthier people, a chance to leave it in the world. And also, of course, some of these state lives, tax revenue from businesses that make money. Senator Bach is absolutely right. We face so many really important priorities. But I do feel pretty confident that money will be spent this year on economic development. And I think we should make it a priority to make sure bioscience is included.
This is a question for the witness. Just a moment, and I would like to thank you very much on behalf of the committee for coming today and testifying. Our offices are always open if there is a concern, whether it is some mechanical regulation that you're talking about or some other type of a concern. As I said, and the amount of lobbyists here today, if we all seem to fly out and work towards something, you could probably make it happen.
Thank you.
And Senator Colson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for hosting this meeting today. I know the Senate is very committed to this area as well. I think if we look back a week ago when we did the forecast for the state, it was a very sobering day. And yet being here today gives us hope, because we have the answer out here in this hall behind us. It's just a matter of setting important priorities, listening to the business community, listening to the stakeholders, and also investing in a knowledge economy. That is our ticket to success. So I hope the Senate and House will work together along with the people in this room.
I plan on working very well with my Senate colleagues. Most of you used to serve with me. I am going to, I've got a note here that Dale and Don would like to quickly wrap up. We got about 45 seconds because we're about 20 minutes over.
That's all I need. Plus, I've been here since 6 this morning and I want to go to the reception. Excuse me.
Oh,
Mr. Chair, literally 30 to 45 seconds. Please listen to me, gang. This is important stuff we're talking about. It runs to the core of our state. Literally does. So let me run down a couple of things. First of all, thank you for your time. I know the hassle of driving and pulling out. So thank you for being here. We really, really appreciate it. Here's 4 points just to think about. We're in a very, very, very competitive situation. I can't overstate that. Second point, we need to wisely invest for our future. We've talked about that. That's nothing. You've been doing wise investment for a long time. So I'm not. Our state is at a tipping point on this. There is no doubt. Fourth point, it takes business, and I'll take the manufacturers and the caregivers in that business, academia, and government together, both sides of the aisle, to make it happen. And if we can't do it,
other people aren't. They are. I talk to them. I see them. I go. I know what's going on. We have got to do cross the aisle. We have got to get academia and business and government in the same boat. Your jobs are incredibly difficult. We really respect that. We want to help you make decisions. So thank you very much. We really do appreciate it.
With that, I'm going to, on behalf of Senator Metzen, who couldn't be here today, myself, I'd like to thank you and Life Science Alley for hosting this particular committee hearing. I also want to thank the staff here, House and Senate, that worked hard to put this together, but also your staff, Dean Boyle, Frank Gill.
Just Kulke. You got it.
And Jeremy Lynn, and everyone else. And I probably have forgotten someone that, you know, us politicians should always realize never to thank individually, but we always try to do that. So if I've missed anyone, please excuse me. But this has been a very good committee hearing. I really appreciate the time that the members put into it, and you and everyone else was here. And with that, unless there's anything else, please adjourn.